Answering this morning's locks and learn Lunishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Aliyah ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and Karen's brother Yeshua ben Shimon Dov, the Neshama should have an Aliyah. Okay, so we are continuing a shiur from last week. If you were not here, we will fill you in. There are two source sheets that should be scattered around if you don't have any. We're going to briefly review the Mishnah and some of the ideas that we saw, and we're going to continue from where we left off. So the Mishnah says, if you look on the first page of Avos, chapter 2, Mishnah 14, all the way on the top of the page, Rabbi Elazar Omer. Rabbi Elazar says, "Have a shakud lilmo Torah. You should be eager to study Torah." That's number one. Number two, "Vidama shetoshav l'apikoros." You should know what to answer an Epicurean and Apikoros. That's what we're going to continue to speak about today. "Vidal ifnei mi'ata amal." You should know before whom you toil. And "V'ne'mon hu ba'malachtecha shisham l'cha schar pulasecha." And that the person who you are employed by, so your employer, is believable, he's trustworthy to give you your rewards. That's obviously a metaphor for something, and we'll see what that is shortly. So the questions that we started with last week that we'll continue to address is, number one, is let's keep in mind who Rebbe Elazar was. Remember, he's the fifth of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students. His praise was that he was, remember?
Not good memory.
Good. That was his counterpart. What? He was Mayana Mitzgaber. He was a overflowing cistern, meaning that he had a very creative, innovative mind. And we'll see some sources that will bring that out. The other thing to keep in mind is that these list of things that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students was introduced, that they each said three things. If you look at the bullet points, at least the way I presented it, is that there are four things here. So what we're going to have to figure out is, what are the three out of these four? How are we going to fit these together? Is one going to be connected to two? Is two going to be connected to three? Is three going to be connected to four? Where are we going to siphon out three of these things? Another thing to keep in mind, again, this is a methodological question that we have brought up numerous times, is how connected is each statement here in the Mishnah? Is the statement of Heve Shakud Lomo Torah connected to the next statement of Vidal Mashatosh of Lapikoros? Are those two independent statements? Similarly, is Vidal Ifnei Mi'ata Amal connected to Vidal Mashatosh of Lapikoros? Are these three integrated statements? So how are we going to understand that? All of that will come to the fore today. So just to briefly review what we spoke about in terms of Heve Shakud Lomo Torah. So you remember what we said about what does Shakud mean? What does it mean that you should be Shakud to learn Torah? Diligent, quickly. So if you look at source number two, it just brings it out. According to the Rambam, it's mihirut v'hishtadlut. It means to have grit, to be able to sit down and learn both quickly, so don't procrastinate, as well as to try hard. And as well, we saw that the Meiri in Mishlei translates it as hasmada v'hergel, to make it a practice, a habit. It's an habitual thing that we do, is that we always learn. That's what shakud lilmod Torah means. Now, apikoros. So what in the world is an apikoros, right? So we saw a bunch of different examples here. Just to briefly review, according to the Gemara, and if you want to look at it inside on your own, based on the Mishnah, source number 3 and 4, the Mishnah seems to deem, the Gemara deems an apikoros as somebody who embarrasses a Talmud Chacham or embarrasses his friend in front of a Talmud Chacham. That's all that the Mishnah says in terms of, and the Gemara says in terms of apikoros. We saw the Rambam expands that to some extent and says that it doesn't just only mean those things about embarrassing your friend or embarrassing a Talmud Chacham. It means anybody who doesn't believe what we need to believe. What do we need to believe? It's a whole series on its own, right? But for now, the Rambam just expands the term and makes it more inclusive of other people, not just ones who embarrass Talmidei Chachamim or their friends in front of Talmidei Chachamim. So when it comes to our mission that says, don't be, you know what to respond to an apikoros, so it's interesting because, and just think about this now, according to the first, if you just look through the Mishnah, that it means somebody embarrassing a Talmud Chacham, so what exactly is this dialogue that you need to be able to respond to? Right, here's somebody who embarrasses a Talmud Chacham, now you have to know what to respond to him. What's your response? Don't embarrass the Talmud Chacham, right? So it doesn't sound like that's really what's going on here. It seems like there's some sort of debate going on. There's some sort of discussion that has to happen. So now you can start thinking. So according to the Rambam, I might understand that. This is somebody who doesn't believe what they need to believe. and we need to be able to debate with them. We need to be able to talk to them. Now, do you remember the Rambam said that we're only talking about non-Jewish quote-unquote apikorsim. But for Jewish apikorsim, he said it's not worth your time. They're not going to listen to you. So in terms of what to respond to an apikoros, the message that we took out, at least, is that you have to know... Yes, but you have to know who you're talking to, right? It's not worth to waste your time. It's not a mitzvah to respond to everybody about anything if you're not going to win the battle, if you're going to end up just spinning your circles, not getting anywhere. It's not really worth your time. Okay, so that's a brief review. If you flip to the second side of page one, so page two on sheet one, this was the second half of what we did last week, and again, I'll briefly recap that. Sources number 8 and 9 are two different approaches to how to understand how we need to interact, if we need to interact, with these quote-unquote apikorsim. So source number 8 was the Magen Avos of the Rashbats, also known as the Tashbats, as a 14th/15th century, if you see here from the, I believe this is the Wikipedia entry here, he was a student of, he was rabbinic authority, student of philosophy, astronomy, mathematics, medicine. He was a worldly individual, if you will. So he argued from this Mishnah, V'dah Masha Tashav L'Apikoros. We'll just read the first line here. Mikan Nahagu Heter Be'atzmenu L'Lmod HaChachamos HaHem. It is from this Mishnah that we learn our leniency, our heter, that our practice that we learn outside philosophies. We learn what the Apikorsim have to offer in order that we should know how to respond to them. It didn't say that necessarily in the Mishnah, but it's implicit from what he's saying. How am I supposed to know what to respond to the apikorsim? If the apikorsim mean people who believe in things that we don't believe in, how am I supposed to respond to them if I don't know, I don't study what they actually believe? And he uses this and he elaborates in the next few paragraphs that, you know, in order to respond to the Christians, to the Muslims of the time, there were lots of debates going on. You have to know their sources too. So we have a heter to read things that otherwise we would probably say we shouldn't be reading in order that we should respond to them. He also says that we have to know a lot of Torah in order to do this. So it's not just one side of the coin. He says you need both fronts. You have to be heavy shakal lomot Torah. You have to know a lot of Torah, but you also have to be able to read their stuff in order to respond to them. Does everybody have to read their stuff? Does everybody need to know what to respond to them? Probably not. People who are going to interact with them need to know how to respond to them, or people who are capable of interacting and have good verbal skills and good thinking processes should be able to interact with them. So that's
time in the Mishnah, women really weren't learning, so it's right. Probably more like on the men than on the women.
Right, but even I wouldn't even say the men either, also, all not men. All men.
Right.
And again, so this is a question. So how limited of a reading are you going to make it? So let's assume you're correct that this statement, when it was made, was only targeted towards X, Y, or Z type of person. Does that expand nowadays when more people are learning and more people are interacting with the outside world and outside cultures, that maybe it expands? That I do need to know, even though the Mishnah didn't mean this person or that person, as an example, as a paradigm, if anybody in that situation needs to be learned, so has this quote-unquote heter to learn their stuff. As we said also, you have to be aware of yourself. This, I believe the Rambam spells out explicitly here or somewhere else. I don't remember. I don't think it's on the source sheets. Says that you have to know yourself also. Right, and he actually connects us to the third part. I think it's on this Mishnah. The third part of the Mishnah says, "V'dal lifnei miata amal." Right, so you have to know before whom you are working. Before you have to know what you're doing. So what does that mean? Before who I'm working? So A, you have to keep God in mind. What else could it mean? You have to know yourself. You have to know the person you're interacting with. If you're going to lose some of your own faith within this interaction, within this endeavor, so you probably shouldn't be doing this. You have to be comfortable. You have to know what you're doing. That's the Rashbat. That's one approach. Then in number 9, you have the Chida, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, who is a different mahalach in life. He wasn't a philosopher. He wasn't a rationalist. Instead, he was a Kabbalist. So for him, interacting with the outside world and reading these things isn't necessarily something that we should be doing. So he says explicitly that it's kilomar, Second line in source number 9, Ein sarach lomod b'sifrei chitzonim, b'tayna shetzarach lahashav lapikoros. He's basically going against the Tashpat, saying, you can't say from here that you can learn all of these outside svarim in order that you can respond to this apikoros. Kasher hein ba'avon, koyomru b'leftam lomod b'sifreim l'shonosam. You can't do that. What's the point of the Mishnah? Lezeh Omer have a shakud lomot Torah. The whole thing that you need to do is to learn Torah. You learn Torah, you learn it well. That is how you interact. That is how you respond to the apikoros, and through your knowledge of Torah. No heter, you can't read anything else. They're dangerous. There's no mitzvah to do it. It's a waste of time. It's possibly forbidden according to some, based on various decrees in the Gemara. We spoke about that a little bit last week. But what you have here is just two different approaches. Can I read these outside books? Can I not read these outside books? I wanted to bring to your attention, I didn't do this last week, so there's a book here that I have. It's called Judaism's Encounter with Other Cultures. It's edited by Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, who we all know from the 10th anniversary of Shabbos. So there's four articles in here, and it was just reprinted. And if you go to the Sfarim seller, they have a, it's now instead of green, it's red. It was just reprinted. You could buy it. I think Amazon sells it also. Magid Books reprinted it. It has four at Sfarim Sale, NYU. Yes.
It's on right now.
It's on. It's worth the trip. So there's four essays in here. The four essays, number one is by Gerald Blitzstein, where he talks about rabbinic Judaism and general culture, normative discussions and attitudes. It's a dense book. This isn't like light reading. You gotta sit through it. So in the first chapter, Gerald Blitzstein goes through a lot of these topics within the times of the Gemara. What does it mean? Was there a ban on the wisdom of the nations? What are these Sfarim Chitzonim, these outside books? Can I read them? Can I not read them? What does it mean? There was a ban on Higayon, logic. What does that mean? How does that approach? What's the, you know, translations from Hebrew to Greek? All of that stuff he deals with in the first chapter. So if you're interested in this topic, I suggest that you look into this. The next chapter is by Dean of Bernard Revel Graduate School, David Berger. Dr. David Berger talks about Judaism in general culture in medieval and early modern times. So he goes from a historical perspective, a lot of this debate that we're talking about, the Tashpats, etc., about how do you interact during the medieval times with outside cultures, he goes through from a historical perspective. Again, we can speak months just on this topic. So it's a fascinating discussion here, the Ramban, all this debate between the rationalists and the mystics, etc. Chapter 3, Dr. Schneer Lyman goes and talks about this from a modern historical perspective. So he talks about Germany during the 18th, 19th century. So Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, Rabbi Shimshon Paul Hirsch, what Torah and Derech Eretz is, and he goes through that whole historical discussion there. And the fourth chapter, and the last one, is by Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, where he talks more on from a philosophical level, Torah and general culture, confluence and conflict. And he goes through really well and thought out, how do we deal with the outside world? What do we gain from the outside world? What do we have to be afraid of from the outside world? What do we have to integrate? What do we have to keep away in order that what could be helpful, etc. So this is really a fascinating book. I do recommend, if anybody's interested in learning more specifically about this topic, to get this. There's a lot of good stuff in there. We did speak about this somewhat for the few of us who did the series that we did on Torah Umada. So this was a big recurring theme that came up. Rabbi Lam also has a book called Torah Umada, where he goes through a lot of the justifications for the whole concept of Yeshiva University, where you do have Torah and general culture, and how do you integrate that? Is there a synthesis? Is it just two parallel tracks? And what's the whole justification for that? So there's some resources you could look into. So now we're going to pick up with new stuff that we haven't done yet, still related to what we're talking about, but we haven't seen any of these sources. So now we're on page 2, source, starting with source number 10.
Right.
Is this mine or yours?
I could have been mine. I couldn't figure it out.
Okay, so we saw Hevi Shaka Domo Torah. We saw Da Mashatash of Lapikoris. And now we have Lifnei Miata Omol. Before whom, know whom before you are working. So who is this before you are working? What are we talking about here? We alluded to this briefly a few minutes ago. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says, V'delifnei miyata amal, lifnei bochen klayos v'leiv. Before he who can know your inner thoughts and emotions, meaning God. So who are you toiling before? God. So what's the message of knowing that you're toiling before God? So that's a nice idea in general. No, Dalif Nemiata Omed, right? That concept. No, before, you know, Shavisi Hashem Negdi Samed. God's always with me. Is that the message here? Is it a general, broad message that you should know that God is in front of you? Perhaps. But Rabbeinu Yonah ties it specifically in our context to the Chisalame Torah Titrach Betasim Kavanascha Ba Uvizet Teda Lahashavis Apikoris. That you need to keep this in mind of Dalif Nemiata Omed and know the Ashaka Lomo Torah. That has to be your backdrop to your interaction with Apikoros. Right? So he's tying all three of these things together. The learning Torah, know that you're standing before God, that you're working, you're doing this for God. You're not doing this for yourself. You're not doing it for fun. You're doing this to defend God's honor from people who aren't necessarily giving that honor to him. So keep that in mind when you are responding and interacting with the Apikoros. A totally different approach, source number 11, the Bartanura says, Dalifnei miyata amal, b'tshuva zu sha'ata meshav l'apikoros. You have to know the apikoros you're talking to. Right? You have to know your enemy here. Shelo yifata libcha l'natos l'dayta. I think this is what I was referring to before. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that you have to know that you shouldn't be enticed to follow the apikoros. So you have, if you are in love with this person, right? Like you're just like so like amazed by how much they know and how much knowledge they have, and you sort of like idealize this quote unquote apikoros, and now you're going to go interact with them and have this debate, quote, like it's a losing battle from the beginning. So you have to know what your self is before you bring this interaction with apikoros. If you're not going to win this, if you think that you're just too quote unquote weak to be able to do this, that you're not going to be able to withstand this challenge, stay away, don't do it. Okay, now, that's Shakud, Apikores, Dalifnei Miyata Amal, but then there was a fourth part. What was the fourth part of the Mishnah? Know who's giving you your reward. Okay, so what does this have to do with anything? So keep in mind, if you're going with the approach of Rabbeinu Yonah so far, if you go with Bartanura that is talking about the Apikoros, so know that you're standing before the Apikoros, this fourth sentence has nothing to do with Lifnei Ata Amal. You could easily connect these, if you're talking about God, these two clauses 3 and 4 are easily connected. Know who you're standing before, who's that? God. Know that he gives you reward. Very easy. It's one idea. If you think that the third clause of know who before you're standing is talking about know the apikoros you're standing before, then here's a fourth idea that has nothing to do with the third idea, that is, know that God gives you reward. Okay, so remember, keep that in mind. This is where all the interactions are going to come through. So source number 12 is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is the one who said that it's talking. Clause 3 is talking about God. So now clause 4 can easily be talking about God as well. So source number 12, Mihu ba malachtecha shishalam lecha schar pu'lasecha. So we're going to have a problem here. This is what we alluded to at the end of the shiur last week when we said that we're going to talk about this. I should keep in mind that I'm getting reward. So where should our minds be going to at this point? It was one of the first mishnayos that we did in Pirkei Avos. You don't do it for reward. Right, heavy I shouldn't think about reward. Well, let's be clear here. I shouldn't do it for reward. Right? Well, so we're gonna have, this is what the Mefarshim are gonna deal with. There's a tension here. On the one hand, you're highlighting, you're telling me I should think about the God's giving me reward, and on the other hand, I have other sources that say don't do it for reward. So how do I synthesize these two ideas? So Rabbeinu Yonah helps us out a little bit. V'af al pi she'omru al tiyuka v'adim ha'misham shinas harav al-manas l'kabo pras, even though we've already said that you should not be like a servant who serves his master in order to get reward. Anybody remember who said that?
Antigonos
ish socha. Okay, so Antigonus Yisrochel said that. Kedei lehisgaber al hayetzer hamasir oso mila asos hamitzvos lalechas biderach hayashar, in order that we can overcome our yetzer that tries to push us away from doing mitzvos and staying on the straight path. Tov l'chashev ki prasielo aleim shlo yiten pischon peh liyetzer l'katrig. So you can, and it's even perhaps good, to use this as motivation. Right? If you're going to lose the battle, it's nice to say, don't think about reward. Okay, but I have a problem here because I'm enticed to do an avera. And there's reward there, there's positives to that, that's reinforcing. So how am I going to choose to stay away from that avera? So Rabbeinu Yonah says, okay, you think about reward. Right? Think about the fact that you're going to get reward for doing the right thing. Tov l'chashev ki prasielu alayim shol yiten pischon peh liyetzer l'katrig. You can't say, oh, I don't get any reward for this. I can't think about reward, but this is so enticing. No. Think about the reward. Think about the fact that there's a reward for what we do. Third line here. V'od, furthermore, ki lo hizhiru ladasa zeh kidei la'avod es hamakom baruch hu mipnei sibas haschar elo shekeshem sha'adam chayav lachkor v'leida yichudu shamakom v'gadluto v'tvunato v'niflo osav asher asa kidei lahosif bo ahava kach chayav shiyashalim schara pa'ulo la'alo salibo godel chasadav shamakom baruch hu. So he says we're talking about two separate things. One question is a question of motivation. What should be your motivation? Antigonus Yisrochel already dealt with that, said, don't be motivated by reward. That's not what we're talking about here. What are we talking about here? We're talking about knowledge. Knowledge. I know, I believe, just like I have to inculcate emunah and faith about everything from God, I have to inculcate the faith. I believe there's reward. It's one of the animanimes, that there's schar v'onesh, there's reward and punishment. I need to know that fact. Is that why I'm doing it? No. That's Antigonus. It says don't do it for the reward. But for the fact, to remind yourself over and over again that there is reward, there's schar v'onesh, that's important to do. That's what this Mishnah is teaching us to do. Alpha pishu adon kolamaisim v'kona kol v'kulanu avadav avdav l'sharso ke'eved miknas kesef v'lo shi'iten schar pras. So again, it's the difference between motivation and knowledge. Knowledge is important. We have to know that God gives us reward. Can't doubt that. We can't question that. We have to remind ourselves. And in terms of the motivation, that should not be your motivation. Okay. Yes?
So if getting a reward should not be the motivation, should motivation be the opposite, not getting punishment?
No. I mean, it could be. Again, this brings us back to that pasuk when we spoke about this more in depth when we talked about Antigonus. There's levels, right? There's levels. It's a backup. Ideally, a backup water, but actually it fits in with what I'm saying also.
Okay.
Yeah. So smart. So smart. So it fits on. It's different layers, it's different levels, right? So should I serve God out of love, out of fear, out of reward, out of punishment? The answer is, ideally, according to Antigonus at least, no. But that's a starting point. It's better than nothing, right? Right. But the end of the Mishnah says, anybody remember? V'himo rashamayim aleichem, that you're fear of heaven should be on you as well. So, and we dealt with that as well. So on the one hand, you have your don't do it for reward, and then at the end he says, but you should fear God.
But what's Yirat Shamayim?
There's multiple ways of understanding it, but the way, let's just do one way, is that that's the whole point. Ideally, you should serve God out of pure just motivation. I want to do this, whether that's love or with just no ulterior motives, no reward, no punishment. That's not what I'm supposed to do. Then he says, as a fail-safe, you at the least have to, you know, realize that even if you don't feel the love right now, even if you don't feel the inherent, intrinsic, you know, unconditional motivation, there's still a backdrop here of you gotta fear it at least. You can't do a sin because I didn't feel the motivation. No, you gotta have the fear. So there's different levels of motivation. There's different ways to motivate ourselves. At the end of the day, don't sin. That's it. How do you get there? Ideally, just lishma, I want to do it for the sake of doing it, I love God, etc. Reward, punishment, etc. is a failsafe. Is a lower level. Okay. Yeah.
So you see clearly in the story of Pinchas, with the Jewish Apocryphus with Zimri, he did not debate with him. His action was his response. And the reward was that he was given for Shalom and given the kahuna. He did not do that.
There was reward. So again, there's always good. That's a good point. There's always reward. There is reward. We're not questioning that. There's a fact that there's a reward, but it shouldn't be his motive. That presumably was not his motivation, and that's not ideally what we should be motivated by either. But keep it in mind that maybe as a failsafe to do more stuff. If you think that reward's going to help you, do it for the reward. It's better than not doing it at all. Okay. Good. Source number 13 here. So we're going to pull all these things together. Tiferes Yisrael is going to give us a little bit of a different view on this, different spin. He's going to give us an idea of all three concepts from the Mishnah, all dealing with one idea. So source number 3, let's see it inside. These are, from now to the end of this year, we're still talking about these concepts, but it's a little bit of you know, snippet of an idea here, snippet of an idea here, snippet of an idea here, overall with the broad theme. So have a shakal domo Torah. So he says, Gimel dvarim nitzrachim hatzlacha b'limud. Here's some educational advice. You want to be a good learner, you want to have success in your endeavors of learning, you need three things. What are those three things? Number one, or Aleph, hashkeda v'hasmada. I need the grit, I need to sit, and I need to learn. And I have to do it often, over, over, over again. Dimlo yasmid lachsor b'chol yom limudo she'esmo. I learned today. I don't review it tomorrow. What's going to happen? I'm going to forget it. Tikdom yitzia lahavaya. It's already gone in one ear, out the other. Lo yishtarish she'enyim b'libo heitiv. It's not going to get ingrained into your brain. V'lachein amar aveh shakot. So you got to do it over and over and over and over again. You have to review. This isn't easy and it's not fun all the time. But you have to go over it. Over and over and over again. So that's number one. That's have a shakad lo motorah. What's number two? Vidas, the second paragraph here. Vidah mashatash of lapikoras, beis ha'iyun, again, same idea. How do I learn? Ha'iyun veha ishamkus veha inyanim shalomed. I need in-depth learning. I can't just do surface learning. I have to go into it. That's vidah mashatash. I have to know what I'm talking about here. Shelo yazuz mishum davar shalomet ad shiyishal b'yashiv l'atzmo al zayin she'elos. You should not stop learning until you answer the following seven questions. Mi, ma, limi, o esmi, matai, aye, eich, vilama. Five W's. What? Right. So, who, what, to who, or to whom, when, where, how, why? Right? You have to ask yourself these questions. Learning takes time, takes effort. I have to delve into it. Shekishetedah lahashav es eila hazayin shelos yivur lacha kol davar chamur v'olmek. If you can answer these questions, you'll get it. You'll understand it. Gam yashkif sevivo sa'inyan shalamet yafa. Know the surrounding topics. Imbo stira b'mesh shalamet kfar. Apply it to previous learning. This is mom's taken out of an educational textbook. Right? You always have to apply it to previous learning. Gam yishal es atzmo im ein sham ba'davar shalomet milo yisera. Is there an extra word here? V'lama nichtav milazos. Why this word, not another word? Ukedoma ba'ashel. So you have to ask yourself questions over and over and over again. One of my goals in the intro to the parshas is to get us to start thinking about it, just to ask questions, even if you don't have answers. Ask questions. What's extra? Achivarlo adavar ke simla chadasha. Okay, new garment. V'ala inyan hazeh amar v'da ma'ashetashav. And that's what. Why the Mishnah is saying know what to respond to, not be chorus. What's the lomar? Lo dai shitzar chatalei da tam shel kol davar kafi aroy kafi she mutter ha Yisraeli ha kosher lishol el tzar chatag gam ken lisbonen bechol. We got to think deeply. Hatam shetuchal lahashav la be chorus to, and this is a perspective taking here, right? You have to not just that I know it, but I have to know what he knows in order to answer him. That's an in depth learning. You got to really know your stuff. if you want to answer not be chorus. This isn't like, okay, I understand it a little bit, I'm okay, next, I'm going to move on to the next thing. Right? If you want to know if you know something, what do you have to do?
Seven questions,
and then know it so in depth that you can teach it to somebody else, that you can convince it to somebody else. So that's number two. Yeah.
Is there any opinion out there that who is the apikoros? Are you the apikoros, or is the other person the
apikoros? We'll see that. We'll see that in a second. This is obviously metaphorical understanding of what it means here. He's giving us a picture. Might not. I don't know if this is the pshat, quote unquote. He's saying that within these three things we can learn these ideas. So we'll get to your point in a few minutes. So that's number two. So number one is you need the grit. You got to keep the hasmada. Number two is you have to go in depth. Number three, v'dalif nemiata amal. This is beautiful for the psychologist here. Hasaras hadaga. You gotta delete your anxieties, your worries, to as much as possible. B'chol machshava acheres b'sha shalomed. And when we're learning, so again, anybody who's learned that when I was in yeshiva, I experienced this often. When there's stuff going on in your life, when you're anxious about something, you can't sit and pay attention and learn for 3 hours in Seder. All you're thinking about is that thing. You're ruminating about it over and over and over again. So how do you get, again, this is easy to say, but so how do you get over this? How do you focus? How do you remove these anxieties? To know who you are learning in front of. Hello, tispo sheish lefanav shete asik b'machshavaska b'nyanim acherim v'ed asku b'malach. Again, this is easy to say, a lot harder to do. But if you were really, in theory, thinking and understanding that God is here and you're learning in front of God and you understood the importance of learning, perhaps that we can sort of move the anxieties somewhere else while we're learning. Again, easier said than done. V'zo sheinis v'nemanu, etc. So these are the three things. You got to... And if you're in a classroom, right, if you're a teacher, this is also really important. So if you're the teacher, everybody probably had this experience. The teacher you're afraid of, right? The teacher not like really afraid of. Are you sitting and paying attention? I don't know. It depends how you gotta have a balance here. If you're anxious. Right. I'll tell us from my own experience. When I was in class and I was afraid, there was if a teacher, again, these are different pedagogical methods, and I'm not sure. It depends on the person. But when a teacher would call on me out of the blue, I'm not sure that helped me learn better. Again, there's different methods here. But I have when I was in yeshiva, there were some shirim. This might be my own problem. There was some shirim that called on you out of the blue, and I didn't go there because I didn't learn well in those situations. I wanted to be focusing on the shir. I wanted to be focusing on it. If I was worried the whole time, somebody's going to call on me, and I wouldn't be able to answer. That just got me nervous. Again, different people for different things. But I think that the point here is that in order to learn, you have to be comfortable, and you have to be able to remove the anxieties away in order to be able to focus. You have to balance it. Again, if people are not, this is. Gets back to Barbara, what you were pointing from before, is you have to balance the Ava, the Yira, the Lashma, all these things together in order to create an atmosphere for learning.
Sorry, I have to leave.
Yeah, that was not my point. Sorry. Yes. Okay. But so this is the first idea. Again, he's reading into the Mishnah. This is, I think, a drash type of interpretation. This isn't exactly what the Mishnah is saying, but he says you can read in this three educational points. So I'm just going to jump. We'll skip 14 for a second, and go to 15 just to get to Sarit's point. So as far as I know, I haven't seen every. Source 15 is on the same page on the left-hand, bottom left-hand side. The Magen Abosur of Shlomo Kluger. As far as I saw, this is the only one who made this sort of internalized psychological approach of what the apikoros is, meaning the apikoros is me, not me personally, me as in the self. V'zehu sh'amar v'damah sh'tashav l'apikoros, dehine yadua da'yetzer hara hu anachash. So he says the yetzer hara is referred to as a snake, a nachash. Uvenachash amru chazal da nachash apikoros haya. So the nachash got the name apikoros. V'lachach hine ha-satan hu ha-yetzer hara hu yored imesis aloi omas. And so he basically understands this as that the apikoros is the yetzer hara, the satan, etc., that's internalized. V'lachach ha-satan mekatreg alav lama lo asak b'torah ach im b'mesh osek b'mase omatan roa lamar b'chol ma'ad efshar k'dei lozik, etc. He keeps going. He basically says that you have to know how to answer. There's two ways to understand this. So he seems to be saying not that you could explain that apikoros is the thing inside of you that's creating this desire to do things that are inappropriate, to believe things that are inappropriate, to do actions that are inappropriate, etc. That's one way to do it. But I don't think that's actually what he's saying. If you read it carefully, he says, "Lachach hinei hasatan hu hayetzer hara hu yored umesis ola umastin." What is he doing? He's trying to. What is he doing? Okay, well, let's see. V'lachach ha-satan mekatreg alav. What's the satan doing? What's mekatreg alav? He's prosecuting you. But what is he prosecuting with? Lama lo asak b'torah. Is that what the satan says? Meaning if you're talking about the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is asking me, why am I not learning Torah? That's the Yetzer Tov.
No.
Excellent. So that's the point. So there's two parts to this. There's the Yetzer Hara, which might entice you away from the right thing. But then there's this Satan, who's at the end of life, when you're going in front of God, what's he doing? He's saying, you didn't learn Torah. Now he's going against you now to make you lose. So he enticed you to lose, and then he prosecutes you for losing. And that's going to be important. We're going to see a fascinating source in a few minutes. So here's one interpretation of an internalizing type of idea when it comes to the apikoros. Source number 14 here is going to put a bunch of these things together and tie it into Rabbi Elazar. Again, Rabbi Elazar is the person who is an in-depth thinker. As we saw in the Tiferes Yisrael, source number 13, that the Dama Shetashav Apikoros, there is an element of iyun v'hais amkus, to go into depth here. So the Pirkei Moshe spells this out explicitly. So the Pirkei Moshe, this is the actual text of the Pirkei Moshe is impossible. I've given it to you before. It's really, really hard to read. It's a weird script, and it's an old photocopy of the book, and it's really difficult to go through. So I just thought it was easier to give you the summary from the book, the Masipta, that I've shown to you before, so it's just easier to read. So Pirkei Moshe Bir, Shreb Elazar ben Arach, Shaya Mayana Miskaber. So he's tying it specifically into his character of being an overflowing spring, somebody who has in-depth thought. Mivar b'mishna kan et shitaso, she'ikr shleimus halimud hu apilpul v'achachma v'yadiya. The essence of learning is in-depth study, analysis, knowledge, asher, mit vasfim mikoach ha'iyun v'amal ha'sichli. They come from the fact that I have to do an in-depth learning. The aimless topic rock b'meshim b'forsh b'sform. I can't just look at what's explicit. I have to go in depth. I can't just read. I need to analyze. Ba'al minas lehagia l'shleimus b'limud zeh nidrashim shnei dvarim. In order to get to this ability to analyze, you want in-depth learning, this is what you have to do. Harishon sheyishkod v'yasmid l'ilmod Torah. You got to learn a lot of Torah. You got to have a smud. You got to do it over and over and over again. The lo amar have shakud b'torah, rak amar sheyes shakud b'limadasa. You don't have to be shoked in Torah, you have to be shoked in the learning. So it's that you're, again, putting it in learning. You're putting that in-depth learning, the grit. V'lirmoz al limud aroi ba, la'amo lahavin davar mitoch davar. I have to be able to understand things, things from things. I have to be able to analyze. Al derech hafuchba b'afuchba dekulaba. I have to overturn, keep going, see what's underneath the surface. Balkane Amar Shayas Shaka. That's why it says Shaka Amar Shayas Mibulimud Omiblila Hafsik. Don't stop learning. So that's number one. I got to keep learning, keep learning, keep learning. Number two, Badabra Shani, Shalay Stopik Rakba Meshi Yishma Meacher Moshi Yerbisram. This is so important. You should not just stop with what you hear from others or read in books. That's not right. Fake news. It's not enough. Ella Shetie Lo Yedia Vahavana Atzmis. Uverura ba meshalama. You have to have an individual knowledge here. You have to be able to say, I know it. Not just that I heard it from somebody else. V'zem rumas b'mesh amar v'dama sh'tashav es apikoros. V'lo amar v'dala hashav es apikoros. What does it mean v'dama sh'tashav l'apikoros? I have to know what to respond. El rumas b'zeh l'davar ha'amor. It's teaching us the following. V'hu. Then we're now on the underlined part of this section. V'hu. Sh'misha yisa v'yitain im sh'kenegdo. If I'm interacting, if I'm debating with somebody else, v'yomar lo dvarim sh'shama me'acherim, my Rebbe said this. I heard this in a drasha. I heard this in a shir. O shematzam kesuvim b'sefer meblishu atzmo yada v'yavin. Or I say, oh no, look at this page. It says it right here. But I don't really fully understand what I'm referring to, what I'm referencing. I'm just spitting back information. Hareish shebinakel yemenutzah. You're going to be beaten. You're going to lose that debate. Hadavar shenidrash men. So what do we need? Hu shetielo atzmo yediya v'havana berura b'ma. I have to understand what I'm saying. I have to understand in depth. Uva'ofen zet yuchal lochiach et tzidkas dvarav l'mishi yisvakikol. Now I could answer. Now I could respond. Right? If I'm just spitting back information, somebody asks me a question, what's going to happen? I'm not going to know. I'm going to get flustered. I'm not going to know how to answer it. If I fully understand it, I'll be able to answer anything. V'afilu la'adam she'ein lo yediyah b'muskelas amitis ha'mushagos b'limud torasenu akdosha k'gon apikoros. Alkein amar v'dama she'tashit kolamar es ma sh'ata om emor la'hashav apikoros da'eyu atabi yediyah shema. You have to know it. It's not even as important that you can be able to respond to them. That's one aspect. But the real thing that he's saying here is that even if you're not responding to them, you have to know how to respond to them. You have to know the in-depth on your own. It's not just that I learned this. You're not going to win that debate. Now, there is a subtle critique here of Rebbe Lazar's Ben Arach's counterpart. Who's Rebbe Lazar ben Arach's counterpart? We did a whole shir on this. Right, somebody said it by accident before. Right, so you have here, the Mayan HaMisgaber is the overflowing spring. Who is his opposite? The Bor Sud, Rabbi Eliezer ben Arach. Sorry, Rabbi Lazar ben Horkanus. Rabbi Lazar ben Arach, Rabbi Lazar ben Horkanus. So in the Mishnah, there were five of them, number one and number five. Number one was the guy who had really good memory. Number five was the guy who was in-depth analysis, right? So according to the Pirkei Moshe, if this is saying you shouldn't be somebody who just spits back information, do you remember what we said about Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus? What he said something in the Gemara, he says that I never said anything unless I heard it from my Rebbe. This is the exact the way he's presenting the Pirkei Moshe is presenting Rebbe Lazar is the exact opposite. Not just I never say anything. No, you can't just not. You got to understand. It's not just repeating information that you heard. You have to fully in depth understanding. It's pretty powerful, and you have the different approaches here. Okay, good. We're gonna do one more source. Any questions before we do that? All right, good. Source number 17, all the way in the back. So source number 16, for those of you who remember from last week, just to give you a little bit of a minute background here. So the term apikoros, we already said that the Mishnah says that it means somebody who, the Mishnah the Gemara says it means somebody who embarrasses a Talmud Chacham or embarrasses a friend in front of a Talmud Chacham. The Rambam includes anybody who doesn't believe in what we need to believe in, right? But what does the actual term mean? Where does it come from? Apikoros. So remember the Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, said it came from the word? No, the Rambam said hefker, right? And he connected it. So hefker means free, flowing, not everything goes type of idea. And that's connected to this idea of you're embarrassing, you don't care, you don't believe in things, everything goes. That's one way of understanding it. The other way to understand the word apikoros is that it comes from Epicureanism. So that's source number 16. What was Epicureanism briefly? It was a type of philosophy that, and there are the Tashbat is quoted as saying that this is what Apikoros means directly in our Mishnah, that it's a reference to Epicureanism, that there's a type of philosophy, a specific type of Greek philosophy, that believed that there were gods, but the gods didn't care about anything that goes on. And there's a bunch of other things that are really against our belief system within Epicureanism. So Dama Shetashav L'Apikoros is saying know what to respond to an Epicurean. Does that mean that you shouldn't know what to respond to other types of philosophies, maybe not. Maybe why did they pick Epicureanism versus others? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. But the idea here is that perhaps it's referring to a specific type of Greek philosophy. So source number 17 is going to take it in a slightly different direction. This is an academic source. The title is Dom Ashatosha Blapikoris. It's from Yehuda Libes, or Libes. I don't know who he is. It's in the journal Madai HaYahadut. Tafshin Samet. So he says, he quotes this idea that Apikoros, he quotes the Rambam, maybe it comes from Hefker. He quotes this idea that Apikoros maybe comes from Epicureanism. He says, I don't know which one's right, you know, perhaps, you know, you could choose. But he says there's another third possibility here that might be a better read within the context of the Mishnah. So there's another meaning of Apikoros within the Greek tradition. Epicurus might not be referring to Epicureanism, but it's still a Greek word. The Rambam says it's not a Greek word. It's an Aramaic word. It's Hefker. Tashbat says it's a Greek word. It's Epicureanism. He says maybe it's a Greek word, but it's not Epicureanism. It's something completely different. So let's read. This is hard, academic, modern Hebrew. I'm going to try my best, but I think we're going to do it. This is a pretty fascinating idea here. So he says, Ata nashuv li'ion b'makor shehu kavanat. So now we're going to get back to the essence. This is excerpted from his article. You can actually access it free, I believe, online. If you just Google search it, you can look through the whole thing. If you want, I could send it to you. Also, I have it on my computer. So leperush hamikori shel ha'alimra bepirke avos amnam. So here we go. Gam kan apikoros hi bevadai mila yevanit. He says, I really think it's a Greek word. Otam mila hamukeret lanu kishmo shel ha'filosof. Like this philosophic name, Epicurean. Aval ledati, I think hamilah mishameshes kan b'mashmauta hamilulit shibasafa hayivanit. I think it's using a different meaning from the Greek word. Beli kesher leuvda shahori hafilosof hishtamshu ba b'shash nasnu livno eshmo. Without the fact, right? So if my name is, so this guy was named Epicurean, right? That was his name. His parents named him that. Why did his parents name him that? Right, so what does the actual word Epicurean mean in Greek? That's what the question is. So it's not referring to a specific person. It's referring to what the meaning of Epicurean is. So what's the meaning of the name? Hamashma'ut ha'yisodit v'amikorit shel amilah yevanit apikoros hi chiyuvit. So it's a positive idea. Apikoros perushu ozer o balbrit. Somebody who helps. Somebody who's part of the clan. So it's a good thing. That's what the real word means. Aval b'mitziyut. Like we have, sometimes we have a word that means something positive, but in usage, it means something negative. Aval b'mitziyut, in reality, ha-politit shel Yavan ha-tika, kibla mila zu mashmaot miyuchedet, it means something specific, pachot ne'ima, not as glorious. Apikori hayu ba'alei britam shel ha-tiranim, they were tyrants. These were the names of the tyrants. Ha-saranim kefishin iskalgu shemam l'tanach. Otam rodnim hashalitim ha'aritzim sheshaltu le'itim ba'arim ha'yivanit. So these were the tyrants who sometimes lived and wreaked havoc to some extent in these Greek towns. Ba'azru lahem kineged b'nei amam, but they helped the nation. So they were basically, they helped the Greek people. But what were they? Ha'tiran shepachad matnita b'nei amo. Gayas chel schirim sheyishamlu lo shomrei rosh. Ve'elu nikur apikori, u'b'shem kibbutzi apikoria. Kolomar, here's where you need to know if you didn't follow those difficult words. Chayal mishamer ishi, and there's your English for you, so you can underline it. They were bodyguards, right? They were the bouncers. Kach lemashal matzanu b'kitvei apalton. So Plato writes b'dialogue Gorgias she Calliculus. I'm not holding in Greek stuff, but in this dialogue. The hademagogue has sophistis ben sicho shel Socrates, so he's in dialogue with Socrates. Mitar ma godel hu osram shel hatiranim. So this Calliculus praises these tyrants. He loves these tyrants. Why? What was so great about these tyrants? Shebe efsharusam la lechas acharei yitzram v'tanu goseam kechol shichpatsu lanatzelus anishlatim. They could do whatever they want. Right? These were the bullies. They were the bad guys. They were the bodyguards. They can do whatever they want, but they protected the people who paid them. They were the bodyguards. B'tnai she'esam apikoria. So now, so what does that have to do with us? So we just, big picture right now, is that we just interpreted the word apikoris as bodyguards, tyrants. What does it have to do with anything? So go to, skip this next paragraph, go to the last paragraph. Lefi divrei hoklitos, Eila, ani mevakesh lahaspir gamesa imra b'Pirkei Avos. Let's bring this back to Pirkei Avos. Have a shakod lomo Torah, v'dam ashetashav l'apikoros. Im lo tishkod hetev alima Torah. If you don't learn Torah enough, yiyeh alecha b'shas misascha, when you die, la'seis din v'cheshbon lefni malcheicha v'ala kashem. There's going to be bodyguards. There's going to be bouncers. If you tie this back to what we just read in Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Magen Avos about the Satan, you're going to have to, you're going to be prosecuted. There's going to be a punishment. There's going to be people there who are going to attack you in at least a verbal way to try to get you down. What did you do wrong? The bodyguards, if you will, of God. So they might not be as, not the same as these tyrants in Greek thought. We're not necessarily paralleling that idea completely, but there are these concepts of you're going to have to pay the price for what you did. So the point here is that at the end of your life, you're going to have to present yourself in front of these quote-unquote apikorsim, meaning these bodyguards, these malachi asharis, who are going to stand at the entrance to Gan Eden, or before, and you're going to have to present yourself. So what am I supposed to tell them? What's dumb ashatash of lapikoris? So you have to have yishakal lomo Torah. In order to answer, to get into Olam Haba, you have to learn the Torah to know what to answer to them. So when they ask you, again, tying it back, it's really not so crazy, because it's similar to what Shlomo Kluger said. Tying it back to, when you get there, you're going to have to be able to answer the question. You're going to have to say, where... Lamalo asakta b'Torah. Why didn't you learn Torah? I did, because have a shakel lomo Torah. I listened to this Perkin Avos's advice, right? So apikoros could mean hefker. Apikoros could mean Epicureanism. Apikoros could mean know what to answer to these bodyguards. So why is this a good? Why is this a possibly good explanation? Besides for the fact that it's interesting, but from the context. What's the context of the Mishnah? So let's just go back. This is what we'll end with, and we'll do some questions. Go back to the first. Just go to look at the Mishnah again. The Mishnah says, "Avishakud lomo Torah, learn a lot of Torah." V'dam ashatash of lapikoros. And then what is the continuation? V'dalif nemiata amal v'nemanu b'malachta chashishan l'chaschar pulasech. This is all about reward. It's all about that dalif nemiatama. Who are you working for? Who are you gonna have to stand for at the end of the day? At the end of your life, what are you gonna have to say over? Where's the reward gonna be? So the apikoros here now, it's not these various different ideas. Learn Torah, A. Know what to answer a heretic. What does that have to do with anything? Number three, you're gonna get reward. No, now it's all one integrative whole. I have to learn a lot of Torah so I can answer at the end of my life these apikorsim, again, not necessarily a negative term, but these malachi ashares who are going to prosecute me. I'm going to be able to answer them, and then I know I'm going to get reward because I did what I had to do. So it's one integrative whole. And this segues us to next week, because what's the next Mishnah in Pirkei Avos? It's a hard one because we didn't do it yet. Right? So the next Mishnah in Pirkei Avos talks about Rabbi Tarfon, who says that all about the concept of reward. So we're all in the context. So we're going from reward to reward to reward. We're all talking on this big topic of reward, right? So now that's why he thinks that this is a good plausible explanation, not just because of the etymology of the word, but because it fits into the context really well. So that sums up all of this Mishnah. We are done with the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The last ideas in the Perek Beis have to do both from Rabbi Tarfon, the famous idea of Lo Alecha Hamlacha Ligmor, the famous song I should say, Lo Alecha Hamlacha Ligmor, is from the Mishnah that we're going to do either next week or the week after. Oh, next week or not. We have to talk about next week in a second. The next time when we do this. So there's a lot of good stuff that's going to come up. Remember, don't get too excited. Well, you can get excited. That's fine. But even though we're going to finish the second parak at some point in the next few weeks or so, we didn't actually finish the second parak because we started in the middle. So we're going to have to circle back to the beginning of the second parak and then... So we're going to take a question and then we'll talk about logistics. Yeah.
Eliminates the whole historical context, because one of the basic questions is why was Rav Elazar so concerned about this aspect of Limud Torah? There must be something historically that prompted this, because so many others were not concerned with this. Mm-hmm. And here, if this is only a process within
So yes and no. So first of all, something we didn't do, which we could have done, but it was just been too much. But maybe for next time we'll see it. That this time they are dealing with Greek influence. I'm saying it's that throughout the times of Chazal, there's Greek influence. They are dealing with specific Greek influence at this time. Rabbi Yeshua, who we mentioned, is interacting with the the political leaders of the time. So we need to deal with that from a historical perspective. So maybe we will spend a little bit of time on that. I'm not sure. But to answer your question, it's still not completely accurate, because the fact that they're using this term apikoros to reflect this idea is historical. So meaning if I'm a speaker to my audience, if you want to put yourself into that historical context, and Rabbi Elazar is telling me something, he's going to be using this word apikoros to refer to something that's a Jewish idea, but he's using a Greek word to do it. So why is he doing that? Because of the historical context. Because maybe that will connect to the people of his time. It's a metaphor for something that perhaps they know about from the outside world. Right? He's using language that they may be familiar with to teach a point that's inherent within Judaism. So there is a historical context, at least in the type of word that he uses.
But the stretch is to compare to Malafei Hasharis. That was our stretch, but it isn't necessarily here.
Well, he's stretching it. Well, to him, it's not a stretch. Right, so the jump is that what you see in reality, if this is a correct approach, if Yehuda Libus' approach is correct, and we're going to say that Rabbi Elazar had in mind these apikoros and these tyrants that people had in mind, so the stretch would be that you see these tyrants in reality. Now, use that as a muscle to what's going to happen to you. We don't have tyrants in this world in terms of Jewish tyrants making you do things, bodyguards, etc. But that concept exists within Olam Haba. That's the stretch. That's a metaphor, and people do metaphors all the time. So that itself is not so crazy. You don't have to buy this idea, but it's not so far fetched to say that he's going to use a term that it's relatable. They understand this. They know this. This is in their lives. And now, this is how it relates to our philosophy, our belief system.
Except that the analogy is sort of denigrating Kamala
Hashara. Yes, but that it's only denigrating. Well, maybe so. It's two parts of the argument. It's only denigrating if you can't call a Malach Hasharis an apikoros right nowadays, because that wouldn't fit, right? But what he's arguing is that our terminology of apikoros is not wrong, but it's different than what the Mishnah meant. Again, it is a stretch, but even within what he's saying, it's a little bit denigrating, because you're calling them, quote unquote, tyrants. So you have to, it's a good tyrant,
It's tangential, but it might lead to a much greater discussion, but I'm mentioning it, I'm asking only because it's brought down here. Anyone who mentions what's going to be in Olam Haba, where is that from? How do they know whether it's metaphorical or not? It's almost taking for granted that we all definitely accept, that there will be an Olam Haba, there will either be guardians, apikoresim, whatever. Where is this coming from that he says it almost as a fait accompli? Sure, this is where everybody knows. Where is it from?
Right, so yes, that is a much broader topic in terms of what Olam Haba is, where it comes from, what the sources for it are, where we know things.
To make this statement that this is exactly what it references.
Yeah, that's a good question, but that's an assumption in all of Chazal, that we might not have experienced it, but there's a Mesorah, there's a tradition, there's hints here, hints there, etc. There's disagreements about that too, and it's a fascinating topic. But yeah, it's a little bit
next year.
Next year. Next year. We still got a bunch of prokem of prokemos left. Yeah.
So according to you who lead this, what would be what's two connect to each other? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's not the second and the third. Would it be the first and the second, or the third and the fourth?
Oh, in terms of the three things.
Yeah.
It would probably be. It could again, according to him, they're all connected in idea. So which one you want to connect to make it three, I don't think it really matters. Right? I think you could do any of them. And remember, with these, it's a little bit easier because there's a vav vav vav. So it's heve shakud and know and believe. Right. So it's you can connect any of them.
Just some all the different examples that you gave of apikoros, just thinking, you know, like Pesach, when you have the four people.
What yeah, and I go, he is he forced me after Shir. He asked me to say it, and I didn't, so you're saving me. Right. So spell it out. So what
the
do you
Russia
want?
Russia could be apikoros. And then your Shal could be apikoros. Because you said you have to search, you have to ask.
Achim could be an apikoros.
Right, yeah.
No, everybody could be an apikoros.
Apikoros
for everybody.
It was like a Jewish, you know, the wayward kid that was apikoros. Here we're saying that the goyim are the apikoroses, and
so you could have a Jewish apikoros too. Again, depending how you define the term,
right?
It could be anybody who doesn't believe what we want them, what we want to believe, and how to debate them, etc. So what happens at the seder? So we don't really our damash, assuming he's an apikoros, right? Do we call him an apikoros? We call him a Russia, and we say kafar be'ikar. We don't call him an apikoros. Our response to him is, you know, punch him in the teeth, whether that's metaphorical or not. Okay, we'll save that for a Pesach shir. But and we don't actually. That's our response, right? That's our dama shetoshim. But and then we do respond to him verbally as well. I'm not sure if we can call him officially an apikoros. From the term, that's a discussion, but is that what apikoros means? So again, from a colloquial term that we throw around the term apikoros all over the place, sure, you can use it. I'm not saying I'm not encouraging to use it, but I'm not sure he's officially a stamp of apikoros.
Yeah.